Stroud. Makes the connection with Brown, straddling the sideline. Does he have the angle? He does! Touchdown! 75 yards!
That's the Birdman, Ian Eagle on CBS, calling Texans football this past fall, and a Noah Brown 75-yard touchdown. He stretched the field for the Texans. He is big, and he can get open vertically. A couple of things Washington needs. He's 28 years old, and he's now a Commander. The Texans released Noah Brown. I think a lot of people were surprised by that, especially because he got a one-year deal with some guaranteed money this offseason to go back at like $3 million, and then they cut him loose. 2 years ago in Dallas, he averaged 13 yards a catch, went for 555 yards. And then this past year, 17 yards per reception, 33 grabs for 567. So over a two-year span, 76 catches for 1,124 yards and five touchdowns. Other than Terry McLaurin, there's nobody in the Commanders' wide receiving room who can even approach that kind of resume. And you're getting that with size, which you lacked big time. He is 6'2+, 225 pounds. He's the heaviest receiver on the team now by over 20 pounds, and he's only 28 years old. As soon as he was released yesterday, we talked on this show about him, Tim Patrick. There was a short list of guys. You wanted Washington to get one of them. Adam Peters pulled it off. Noah Brown to the Commanders, according to multiple reports.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that last year was, you know, he ends up being kind of their fourth option as you look at it. But then you go inside the numbers a bit. He missed a bunch of games. He missed seven games total. You catch 56 yards per game, which is what he did. Now, buoyed by some of those big home runs, but still, in a receiving core with Nico Collins, Dalton Schultz at tight end, Tank Dell, young prolific receiver in his own right, and veteran Robert Woods running around for a rookie quarterback, he was on, you know, 700, 800, 900 yard pace. I don't think he would have gotten there again because of too many mouths to feed. And that's not the point is there's some gas in the tank here. There's some ability. I'm with you. I was kind of surprised. I mean, everyone's looking at Houston with that receiving core going, if they don't keep everybody, a lot of teams should probably pounce at the chance, whoever they get rid of. If it's Woods, if it's Brown, and it turns out it being Noah Brown, this is the guy with the most pelts on the wall, non-McLaurin division at this point for Washington. That's a big deal.
Darius, I just sent you an audio clip of Nick Caserio today talking about cutting Noah Brown with the Texans media, and he made it really clear they didn't want to cut Noah Brown. It was one of those, like you just said, I think the quote was, not everybody can make it decisions, but there were suitors. I mean, there are other teams that clearly wanted this guy, and if you're the agent or the player, in this case, Noah Brown himself, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at Washington's room and say, I think I might be able to be the number two wide receiver.
I got a chance there.
I could start opposite Terry McLaurin. You're not going to in Houston with Nico Collins, star, Stephon Diggs, star, Tank Dell, stud. But in Washington, you could. This is the GM of the Texans, Nick Caserio.
Yeah, I mean, Noah's a good football player. I mean, Noah's going to be on a team. There's no question about it. He helped us win, honestly, probably two games last year by himself. So, I mean, good football player. We understood going into this as we constructed the team, Cody, that, you know, weren't going to be able to keep everybody, right? So, got to make some hard decisions. I'd say that was a difficult decision. So, we kept the players that we felt right now that could help us the most. I mean, I'd say Noah, I mean, certainly part of that discussion. In the end, we just made the decision to move on. But I have a lot of respect for Noah. He's probably one of the toughest players that we had on his football team. Took advantage of opportunities last year. And, I mean, again, he won us two football games literally by himself, the Cincinnati game, the Tampa Bay game. I mean, I don't know, he had 1,000 yards receiving in two games, whatever it was. But good football player. He's going to be on a team fairly soon and probably going to help a team win. So, I mean, those are the players that, you know, you wish them well. Just can't keep everybody, but certainly wish him well and, you know, have a lot of respect for Noah.
So Caserio is joking a bit about the numbers, but they beat the Bucs 39-37 and the Bengals 30-27, a couple shootouts where they moved the ball. And that was really the explosion of the Texans offense at that time. And Noah Brown in those two games went six grabs for 153 yards against the playoff-bound Bucs, and then against the Bengals went seven for 172. Like, he went ham a couple straight weeks. Now, he didn't have another week like that, really. He had an 11-target, 8-catch, 82-yard week when he got some ops against the Titans in December. But after those two games, he basically went a month where he was either inactive, not playing, or didn't catch a ball. So it was wildly inconsistent, both with injuries, where he missed six games, and just being loaded at the position. He was even inactive at different points.
And now you add Stephon Diggs to that, there's even less of a role. So again,
how about that two-week span?
Yeah.
13 catches for 320-some yards.
I'm over-talking about the pace because it's, again, buoyed by those two enormous days. But the reason I keep bringing it up is because there's nothing like that in Washington's receiver room. 56 catches, 952 yards. That's what his pace was if he had played week in and week out. And again, it's not apples to apples because, you know, not everybody has to worry about, or people have to worry about Nico Collins and Schultz underneath and how good Tank Dell was. And there's a million factors. That Houston offense was a renaissance. It was amazing. It was awesome. It was so much fun. And he was a part of that. The big play threat certainly was there. But he also was fine in Dallas in kind of a similar role as a sort of a third receiver, right? Not quite as prolific some of those big games, but was around certainly a pretty darn good receiving room there and kind of turned in the same work over the last couple of years. And listen, it's not as if they went and got Jerry Rice or Tim Brown in their primes. Nobody's saying that. What I am saying is this was a room without much. When you added up all the numbers of everybody that's not Terry McLaurin over the last couple of seasons, you don't get to what Noah Brown turned in the last couple of years. He's got a shot. I have no idea if he's going to be able to walk in and play week one to get up to speed and learn everything, but he's going to be a factor this year.
I can't speak for everybody because I think just about one by one to a man, every person saw him get cut and said, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But for me, it was not just the size or that he's had some success. Both of those things matter. He was in Dallas with Dan Quinn. And we haven't gone full Commanders, but we've got a little Calmanders thing going on here. And he is a Calmander, right? He knew Dan Quinn. They had been together in Dallas. That's going to help. Tyler Biadasz, Dorrance Armstrong. Mm-hmm. We could keep going. The list goes on the staff. Joe Witt Jr. with players. But I think that all has to be part of this. They know the guy a little bit. They can bet on the person as well. So very, very big deal. Noah Brown, if you're just jumping in your car, the former Texans wide receiver who had a two-week stretch last year where he caught 13 balls over 320 yards, has been signed by the Commanders after cutdown day. Very well could end up being their number two wide receiver before it's all said and done this season here in D.C. He's got to overtake Deami Brown, who had fewer catches last season than Brown had in that two-game stint. And he's got to overtake Olamide Zaccheaus, who had fewer catches last season than he had in that two-game stint. And if he could do that, then he could start opposite Terry McLaurin and be a big part of what they're trying to do here. We should also mention, though, that the practice squad was officially formed by the Commanders today, and we now know who made that practice squad. Notable names, I won't go through all of them and bore everybody, but these are some guys that I think you'll be interested in. Running back receiver Kaz Allen, who they now list as a running back.
There we go.
I think he's a fun little project with some speed. I like what he's looked like out of the backfield. They have three running backs on their practice squad, though. Chris Rodriguez, the sixth-round pick last year. It seemed like they didn't think that highly of, but they brought him back, so maybe they like him some. And then Michael Wiley, the undrafted free agent out of Arizona, who I thought might make the team. All three of those guys are back. Cole Turner, a lot of people wondered if he would make the roster. He didn't have a good final preseason game and got cut. He's on the practice squad. So are wide receivers Mitchell Tinsley from Penn State and Bryson Tremaine from Stanford, both undrafted free agents last year. Tinsley was on the active roster most of the season. Tremaine will be on the P squad now for a second season. And quarterback Sam Hartman is back in the building. So Trace McSorley not coming back, but Sam Hartman, who they brought in right after the draft from Notre Dame by way of Wake Forest, Sam Hartman is on the practice squad for the Commanders.
Not talking about anybody specifically, GP, but I always find myself trying to caution against this. I feel like we always do it, you can't afford to cut that guy. You won't be able to get him to the practice squad. There's 32 teams where that's usually the case. You know what I mean? Where like everybody's got a version of Kaz Allen or Julian Good-Jones or Sam Hartman, who's got some college pedigree. How are you going to do it? Are we going to be able to get him to the practice squad? The answer, like 99% of the time, is yes. Always try to remind myself of that.
The lack of waiver wire additions is where we started the show today. The lack of urgency or aggressiveness to hit the waiver wire and to try to go add talent. Noah Brown was going to be available in free agency, so that was kind of one of the caveats provided at the time. Maybe they still make a move or two. But Adam Peters said when he met with the media today, we had to be really sure. Like, we had to know we were getting a guy that we thought was better than what we had because we don't want to risk necessarily losing out on a possibility to be high up in the waiver wire, grabbing someone a little bit later on in this process, too. And by waiting, you get Noah Brown, who's a better wide receiver than anybody that was claimed anyway.
Yep.
And maybe they'll still have a chance to make an impact on the team.
Love it.
As they get closer. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Pregame of Nats baseball is less than 4 minutes away. So let's get you some details on tonight's Nats matchup with the Yankees. Should start by telling you that Dylan Cruz had two hits last night. First multi-hit game of his career, including a double. He stung off the wall over 100 miles an hour off the bat. He also stole his first base and made a really nice play in right field. He's batting leadoff tonight,
Danny.
We'll get to the lineups in a second. But Davey Martinez and this coaching staff liking what they see from Dylan Cruz, moving him up to the top of the order tonight against the Yanks.
Yeah, chance for C.J. Abrams to get his feet up against the nasty lefty and Carlos Rodon. So Nassim Nunez is playing short, so why not have somebody else play hit leadoff? And there it is, Dylan Cruz in the leadoff spot.
I mentioned this yesterday, but for people that weren't listening, and this might be a nothing burger when it's all said and done. It was a small sample. But this season in the minors, Cruz had huge reverse splits, meaning he was really good against right-handed pitching, and he wasn't nearly as good against left-handed pitching. He took an 0-for in his first game against a lefty.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, obviously, doubled against a power righty in Gerrit Cole. Lefty on the mound. Davey has not really paid any attention to that because when they played a lefty, he's batted him in the top two spots in the order against the righty. He was way down at 7. But just something to keep an eye on as we move forward. Speaking of which, let's get to your Nats starting lineups and pitching matchups presented by the Window Man. Since 1989, the Window Man has been the educational window company. Get your free, no-pressure, in-home estimate at thewindowman.com or at their Fairfax showroom.
Behind Mackenzie Gore on the bump, leading off playing right field, Dylan Cruz in left field. The James Wood hitting second at first base, batting third, Andres Chaparro. Batting fourth, your DH, Juan Yepez. Batting fifth, playing third base, Jose Tenya, batting sixth, doing the catching, Kaber Ruiz. Hitting seventh at second base, Luis Garcia. Batting eighth, your guy, my guy, our guy, Jacob Young. And batting ninth at shortstop, Nassim Nunez. That is your lineup.
Wow. Rare start for Nassim Nunez. How about that? Six-inning outing for Mackenzie Gore last time we saw him. Just one run given up.
He was good.
Finally. He needed that start so badly. If he can make it two in a row, you'll feel like he's coming out of whatever elongated, like half-season rut that he was in, the 25-year-old power lefty. Stuff's not an issue, man. He's got the best stuff in the rotation, the best stuff in the organization, perhaps. He's just got to harness it. Former number three overall pick has not located, commanded, controlled the fastball. So he's got to make sure he's doing that early tonight, give himself a chance against a good Yankees lineup, at least the top of that lineup with Judge and Soto for sure. Let's get you a Nats weather report presented by Pepco. Storm season is here, and we know a little prep makes a big difference. Get storm informed at pepco.com/storm prep. Our show meteorologist is Darris Dameron.
It's going to be a steamy night here in the Navy Yard. It's going to be 96 degrees at first pitch. Feels like 100 almost.
Yuck.
It'll dip into the high 80s, mid 80s. By the time the game ends. And there is a little bit of a chance of rain in the 8 o'clock hour, but hopefully it staves off so the Nats can pull off the series win here at Nats Park.
Chance of rain. You know what I got to do? I got to double click. No rain delays. We're getting through this thing with ease, right? No issues on the rain?
I'm gonna go ahead and say there will be no rain delays.
Here we go.
Here tonight.
Now you are our show meteorologist. You've never led us astray. That's why you're our show meteorologist.
The Nats' entire starting lineup put together has fewer homers than Aaron Judge.
How about that?
Yeah.
Big thanks to Ryan Clary and Darris Dameron, Dad.
Dad. Love you, Dad.
For their hard work behind the scenes. Thanks to all of you for listening. Tomorrow, hopefully, we're going to talk to Adam Peters right here on Grant and Danny. Show starts at 2 o'clock. Better be here.
Thank you for coming.